Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2002. Media-driven law.
Hello. Last week, we talked about the corruption of America's judicial system, and I mentioned a few specific examples of this corruption. It's a very big and very important subject, though, and we ought to explore it further. I'll talk about more examples of corruption in a minute, but first, let's look at the general context, at the overall framework of law in American life. The men who founded America and wrote our Constitution understood the need for a government and for laws. They understood that the country couldn't survive, couldn't maintain its identity and its independence without a government to provide certain essential collective functions, such as national defense. They also understood the need for laws and a judicial system, without which there will be only mob rule or some other form of tyranny, and civilization cannot flourish. But the founding fathers also were basically suspicious of government, as determined as they were to provide a framework of law that would allow citizens to live without the threat of domination by mobs or tyrants or foreign invaders. They were at least as determined to protect citizens from the unchecked power of government. They believed in the minimum amount of government and the minimum number of laws necessary to protect the independence of the country and the freedom of its citizens and provide for the most essential needs of civilized life. They believed that the government should not restrict the freedom of citizens or intrude upon their private affairs any more than absolutely necessary. They believed that to the greatest degree possible, individual citizens should be responsible for their own behavior and their own welfare. It was not the government's business to tell people how to conduct their own affairs, or to keep them from hurting themselves, or to take care of them if they couldn't or wouldn't take care of themselves. Well, of course, such an ideal system couldn't last. Even if the average genetic quality of the population had been maintained, the mere fact of increased population density and increased urbanization required more laws and more government simply to maintain order. And of course, the average quality of the population wasn't maintained. The strongest immigrants were the first to arrive at a time when there still was a frontier to be conquered and a lot of hard and dangerous work to be done. After the frontier was won and life had become much easier, the weaker, less independent immigrants were willing to try life in America, and things have gone downhill ever since. The Civil War and the subsequent release of millions of freed slaves into the population was a blow to the system from which it couldn't recover without drastic measures, and those measures never came. On top of this, there was the increasing feminization of public life throughout the 20th century, the increasing demand for more services, more guarantees and more protection, along with less concern for freedom. All of these things were bound to change the system, even if there were no malice involved. And there was malice. There is malice. There are those whose goal throughout the last century has been the subversion of our system of laws and government. Those whose goal has been to use our system to take away what remains of our freedom, then to enslave us and plunder our civilization, and eventually to destroy us. Their instruments of subversion are the mass media of news and entertainment. And they always have had allies aplenty among the masses of envious and resentful ne'er-do-wells, among the irresponsible and amoral climbers, and among the ever-so-greedy rich, hoping to become even richer by collaborating with the enemies of our people. On top of these, the enemies of America have created whole new classes of allies by encouraging and promoting certain pathologies in our own people, homosexuality and feminism, for example, and then giving these pathological groups a vested interest in the destruction of the old order in which their sickness was neither encouraged nor tolerated. This is the age-old tactic of divide and rule, but it has been applied during the past century with an especially fiendish degree of ingenuity. What we see today, in fact, is a huge array of groups, large and small, with various vested interests in the continued corruption of our system of laws and law enforcement. We have employers so greedy for profit that they encourage the continued influx of illegal aliens and discourage the enforcement of immigration laws just so they'll have a supply of cheap labor. We have a huge welfare class receiving handouts or benefits from the public treasury, ranging from food stamps to rent subsidies to special tax deductions, who will fight, or at least will vote, to keep the laws in place that provide their benefits. And I'm talking only about the white welfare class. These welfare laws never should have been enacted. They are the work of greedy politicians aiming to buy votes with other people's money. We have a lot of people in comfortable or prosperous or prestigious positions today who wouldn't have gotten where they are if they had had to depend on their own merits in competition with others. So instead, they managed to get legislation enacted requiring employers to give them preference in hiring and promotion. And again, I'm talking only about white people. If we add the damage done to our system of laws by non-whites scrambling to gain advantages for themselves, we have a real mess. In the midst of all this complexity and all of this complicity in the ongoing corruption of American laws and government, however, there is a central thread pulling it all together, a primary corrupting force that has motivated and facilitated most of the damage that has been done. And that primary corrupting force is made up of the mass media of news and entertainment, or more accurately, the Jewish minority that effectively controls the mass media. I'll mention some recent events that illustrate the way in which this central role is played by the media. I mentioned one of these events in last week's program, and that was the murder last month of a white hitchhiker in Jasper, Texas, by four blacks who chased him along a country road in their pickup truck, ran him down, and then deliberately ran their truck over his body and left him lying dead in the road. As I said last week, there was a January 21st Associated Press report on this murder, but almost no newspapers or other news media have picked it up. The average American couch potato still hasn't heard a word about it. Compare that with the dragging death of a black in Jasper by three white men in 1998. The Jewish media gave that 1998 killing nonstop publicity for months on end. I myself was interviewed at least a dozen times about it simply because the media wanted to emphasize the racial angle, and so they needed to associate a white racist, namely me, with it. And besides, one of the three whites reportedly had read a book I wrote. The media message in 1998 was, "Isn't white racism awful? White racism was responsible for this gruesome murder. White racism is murder." We heard that message over and over and over again. Even now, nearly 4 years later, whenever they do a special on racism or on hate crime or something similar for television, they talk about the 1998 Jasper dragging, portraying the black victim as a choir boy and a credit to his community, whereas he actually was a convicted felon and a habitual drug abuser. And while you and I can see through this propaganda trickery, and such a message only makes us angry at the Jews behind the trickery, 95% or so of the Americans believe whatever they are told to believe by television. They don't see the puppeteers, they just see the puppets, and they believe. They chatter among themselves at their churches and in their beauty parlors. Isn't it just awful what happened in Jasper? It's because those three whites are racists. Isn't white racism awful? And when the lemmings absorb such a message, it does have a big effect on the way in which America's system of government and laws works. The politicians scramble to take a politically correct position. And among the politicians are the judges and the prosecutors and the chiefs of police. And the lemmings themselves, feeling the sense of white racial guilt the Jews' propaganda was meant to make them feel, are determined to atone for their guilt by punishing someone severely. And it is all a media production. If there's no media propaganda, there's no politically correct posturing by the politicians, and there's no feeling by the lemmings that they have to punish someone. That's the way it is with the murder last month in Jasper. Because the media aren't interested in it, neither is anyone else. And the similarity in the two murders is amazing. In both cases, a group of lowlifes in a pickup truck in the little East Texas town of Jasper offered a ride late at night to a lowlife of a different race that the lowlifes in the truck were at least casually acquainted with. In neither case was there any prior plan, any conspiracy to kill anyone. In both cases, at some time during the ride, an argument ensued, with the lowlifes in the truck administering a beating to the lowlife to whom they had given a ride. And then the lowlifes in the pickup truck killed the other lowlife in an especially atrocious way. In one case, by dragging him behind the truck until he was dead. And in the other case, by chasing him in their truck as he ran along the road, running him down, and then killing him by deliberately driving their truck over him and crushing his body. In both cases, the killers drove off and left the body of their victim lying in the road. Why did the media bosses decide to make an enormous hullabaloo, a real media circus, out of the first Jasper killing, and to ignore the second one? Obviously because of the one significant difference in the two cases. In the first case, the killers were white and the victim was black. And in the second case, the killers were black and the victim was white. This doesn't mean, of course, that the blacks who killed the white hitchhiker, Ken Tillery, in Jasper last month won't be prosecuted, or that the whites who killed the black, James Byrd, in Jasper 4 years ago wouldn't have been prosecuted if the media had ignored that killing. But the difference in media coverage, nevertheless, does make a big difference, not just in the way the law is applied to the immediate case, but also to the changing climate of the laws and government for future cases. Justice is traditionally portrayed as a blindfolded woman holding a sword in one hand and scales in the other. But today the blindfold really isn't doing its job. Today justice is peeping under the blindfold so that she can see to do the politically correct thing. And she has a Jew whispering into her ear just to be sure that she makes decisions that not only are politically correct, but that also don't inconvenience the arbiters of political correctness themselves. In past broadcasts, I've talked about the breakdown of law and order in Russia in the wake of communist rule. The communists, which is to say the Jews, sucked the country dry and then headed for greener pastures. At least most of them did. Some Jews stayed behind to squeeze still more blood out of the Russian people. In several broadcasts, we've looked at the trade in white sex slaves centered in Israel. Jewish organized crime gangs kidnap Russian and Ukrainian girls, or in some cases, lure them to Israel with the promise of employment as secretaries or housekeepers or nannies, and then forced them to work as sex slaves in Jewish brothels. Other Jewish crime gangs in Russia exploit Russian children for the pedophile market around the world. I reported in my broadcast of October 7th, 2000, the breakup of a child pornography ring operating from Moscow and selling videos of Russian children, some of them only 2 or 3 years old, being raped, sexually tortured, and even murdered. There actually are perverts who obtain sexual gratification from viewing such horrors. And child pornography is big business. The child porn videos coming from Moscow sell for hundreds or even thousands of dollars to pedophiles in the West. The pornographers in Moscow obtain children from Russian orphanages by bribing corrupt administrators at the orphanages, or they simply kidnap them from public parks or playgrounds. My report of October 7th, 2000, was based on the breakup of one child porn operation in Moscow after an investigation by Italian police and postal officials of the shipment of videos from Russia to pedophiles in Italy. In that report, I quoted from a Reuters news dispatch datelined Naples, Italy, September 27th. I'll read you again what I quoted in my report. Police said on Wednesday that they had arrested 8 Italians suspected of belonging to a child pornography ring that traded videos over the Internet, including films of Russian children who were abused to death. Police specializing in Internet crime told reporters that their 19-month investigation had given them enough information to begin investigations into 1,700 people suspected of buying the material over the web. They said 3 people in Moscow ran an operation to kidnap children from orphanages, circuses, and public parks and film them while they were forced to commit sexual acts. Police said they had intercepted some 3,000 tapes and CDs and digital video discs of child pornography, including some involving children only several months old. End of quote. These arrests were big news in Italy, where TV newsmen horrified millions of Italians by broadcasting excerpts from a couple of the child porn videos on a primetime national television news program. I reported that the newsmen responsible for the broadcast were immediately fired by the news director of the government-run network, Gad Lerner, a Jew, who obviously was very unhappy that the news had gotten out. Perverts in the United States also buy child porn videos from Russia, and I commented in my report of October 7, 2000, that in the United States there was practically a media blackout on the Italian investigation and the subsequent arrests in Italy and in Russia. But there was an Associated Press release on September 29th, 2 days after the arrests. I'll quote a few lines from that release. Police said they had broken up an online international child pornography ring, arrested 8 Italians and 3 Russians, and seized thousands of videos and photographs. The Russian-run ring, which distributed an explicit catalog on the Internet, catered to clients in the United States, Germany, and Italy. Its inventory included films of children being tortured and killed. Investigators say the pornography ring produces and distributes images showing children as young as 2 years old being sexually abused. Some of the victims reportedly were stolen from orphanages, others from families. Its catalog offers films of killings for about $20,000 and images of people having sex with children for about half that. End quote. That Associated Press release from September 29, 2000, was virtually ignored by news media in the United States. Then on January 4th of last year, a man described by federal authorities as the U.S. West Coast distributor for a child pornography ring operating in Moscow was arrested in Walnut Creek, California. That was Seth Beckenstein, a Jew. And at the time I thought, at last, now the media cannot avoid reporting this filthy business to the American people. There will be a hearing and a trial for Beckenstein, and the whole story will come out. But of course, the story didn't come out. The mass media did avoid reporting anything about Beckenstein's arrest or his trial. Even the big newspapers in California were silent. The American public remained completely ignorant of the whole business. Do you understand what Beckenstein was doing? He was selling films to thousands of American perverts that showed Russian children and infants being raped, sexually tortured, and murdered. He was a part of the operation that kidnapped, raped, sexually tortured, and murdered these Russian children. Without people like Beckenstein to sell the films, the business couldn't have operated. He was placing wholesale orders to Moscow for more films, new films, and wiring the money that kept the operation going. He was as guilty as the people who actually did the kidnapping, raping, torture, and murder. Well, last month, on January 4th, exactly a year after his arrest, Seth Beckenstein, who has been out of jail on bond the whole time, was sentenced to 18 months imprisonment after pleading guilty. That's just 18 months for being a major part of an operation involving the most horrific criminal activity imaginable. 18 months for raping, torturing, and murdering hundreds of white children for the gratification of unspeakably perverted freaks. And there still hasn't been a peep about Beckenstein or the child pornography operation in which he was engaged in any major media outlets in the United States. So far as the TV-watching public is concerned, it never happened. Imagine how differently the Beckenstein case would have been handled by the courts if the Jews had decided that it served their interests to make a cause célèbre of it. Imagine what would have happened to Beckenstein if the Jewish media had given him the 1998 Jasper, Texas treatment. Gruesome excerpts from the films he was peddling would be shown on primetime TV in America night after night. TV crews would have interviewed some of Beckenstein's customers and had them tell everyone how much they enjoyed seeing little girls or little boys sexually tortured. There would have been tearful interviews with the Russian parents of some of the kidnapped children. The Jews would have kept this up week after week and month after month until the lemmings all across America finally had gotten it and were screaming for Beckenstein's blood. And behold, the federal prosecutor would have seen the light and realized that Beckenstein had not only violated a law against sending child porn through the mail, he also was guilty of kidnapping, rape, and murder. And the judge would have seen the light too. And Beckenstein would be sitting on death row now, hoping that the other inmates didn't get their hands on him before he got his lethal injection. But the Jewish media bosses had no interest in punishing their fellow tribesmen for his exploitation of Russian children. After all, the children were only Gentiles, only Goyim. And their fellow tribesmen in Israel were making a very good living in the sex slave trade, exploiting the older sisters of these Russian children. Why stir things up? And they didn't even have to tell the prosecutors and the judge in the Beckenstein case to take it easy on Seth. The court system already has become so corrupted in America that the prosecutor and the judge understood without being told that they shouldn't be too hard on Beckenstein. And now this depraved monster will be back in business again in a few months. I'll sum it up for you. Our whole system of laws and government in America has become media-driven. Until we drag the filthy creatures controlling the mass media of news and entertainment out of their offices and drive stakes through their hearts, The system will only become more and more corrupt. Thanks for being with me again today.